Today's guests on Medios Scientific's The Business of LoRaWAN are Jonathan Bennett and Tony Good, two of the core contributors to the Meshtastic open source project and co-founders of Meshtastic Solutions. Jonathan is one of the lead developers behind Meshtastic's firmware and Linux integration, while Tony designs rugged, purpose-built cases and complete devices that make the system usable in the real world. Together with a wider team of developers, engineers, and contributors, they're helping shape the future of off-grid mesh communications. In this episode, we talk through real-world use cases like disaster response in Portugal, low-cost search and rescue deployments in the US, and how small businesses and agencies are beginning to use Meshtastic for GPS tracking, environmental monitoring, and more. You'll also hear how they're working with vendors like Rack to onboard sensors, everything from compasses to rain gauges, and why this lightweight LoRa-based system is gaining interest from state governments and even enterprise teams inside Amazon. Whether you're a business evaluating Meshtastic for your use case or just curious how open source projects scale into commercial grade solutions, Jonathan and Tony bring clarity and insight from the front lines. This episode is sponsored by the Helium Foundation's IoT Working Group. Helium offers global LoRaWAN coverage and is used by everyone from hobbyists to businesses deploying countrywide networks. If you'd like to see if Helium coverage exists near you, check out the links in the show notes. To get started using Helium today, you can sign up for a console account with Medios Scientific at console.medioscientific.com. Now, let's dig into the conversation with Jonathan Bennett and Tony Good. Jonathan, Tony, welcome to the Business of LoRaWAN show. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Hey, Nick, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
I'm psyched to have you guys on. I thought we'd start this off. We may kind of back into this with how Meshtastic started and certainly how you guys found it and I found it. But do you have a favorite Meshtastic story?
Ooh, that is a really good question. So, you know, a lot of the things you talk about here on the show is very business centric. Meshtastic is kind of slowly moving that way. We feel like there's some things that might make sense for businesses, but for the vast majority of use cases right now, it's individuals. And, you know, kind of the initial idea was it's dudes out on a hike together out past where their cell phones work. Mm-hmm. And so that has kind of turned into, a lot of people have looked at that and gone, disaster preparedness. And so we've got a kind of a big community thinking about that. So right now, my favorite story is back a couple of months ago in Portugal and Spain, the power grid went down for like a couple of days. It was kind of a big deal for them. There were some tourists that also happened to be Meshtastic users, and they were staying like out in the villa somewhere in Portugal, and the lights just went off. And they're like, what is going on? They had their Meshtastic devices. They pulled their Meshtastic device out and just sent over the public mesh. So, you know, the people that are in within a couple of mile area, what's going on? The locals that were there were able to get news, and they knew what was going on. We're telling them, give them back the answer. Power grid went down, maybe down for a couple of days. And so these tourists, these guys that, you know, legitimately could have been in a tough spot, were able to get news and get updates over the mesh using Meshtastic and kind of stay abreast of what's going on. Right now, that's my favorite story of things I've heard people doing.
Rad. Doesn't get much better. Tony, what do you got?
Mine's very easy. Dovetailing off what Jonathan started with, I was looking for an off-grid comm solution. I was in the Army for 20 years, so I like simplicity. And I live in Maryland, and way out in Western Maryland, it's better now, but cell coverage used to be abysmal. So you'd go out in the woods, you'd hike, you see the sights. And at the time, to double down on terrible comms, I had T-Mobile, no towers in the area. So I went out there basically like alone and afraid, primitive, you know, smoke signal level type, you know, capabilities. So I realized I needed something that could communicate at least 1 to 2 kilometers in very dense vegetation. And Meshtastic easily does that. Since then, I switched to Verizon. They've built towers because a lot of more wealthy people moved out there. So they know their customer base, and it's better now, but it's still great to have a backup.
Very, very cool. I think we all came to it in different ways. I've found Meshtastic, funnily enough, through searching for a lost paraglider. So it's always like the use case that drives it. So it started off as being used for hikers, bikers, you know, folks out there, pilots. Kevin Hester kicked the whole thing off, and he's a paraglider pilot, if I remember correctly. And now it's starting to move into business. So someone's listening to this, and they've heard about LoRaWAN, they've heard about Meshtastic, and they're wondering if they could or should use it in their business. Maybe we start off by talking about what businesses are you guys seeing use Meshtastic?
We're still in kind of the initial stages. So we have recently launched Meshtastic Solutions, which is our business kind of around trying to turn this thing into accessible to businesses, right? Like that's one of the things that we're trying to do is have a place where a business could come and get support. And we've got reach out from one of them is like a state government, one of these big states that's out in the middle of nowhere. You can probably do the math and figure out where I'm talking about. But you have pilots that'll be out there, and you know they're far enough out that maybe their regular radio doesn't work all that well. And so they're looking for like a way to get weather updates in the air. And so this is a potentially a pretty big use that's coming. I am also aware of apparently people at Amazon are looking into this, and I'm not sure all of the things that they're using, looking to use it for. That's not live yet, but we got told that they're kind of looking at it. And so we're still kind of exploring and mapping out, like, where does this make sense? I'll tell you, I use it. I've got one of these in my vehicle, and it has a GPS in it, and it sends back location beacons. And so I can track where my vehicle is around town. And so, you know, there's a use case for stuff like that. Basically anything where you want to be able to do location tracking, it's pretty good at.
Cool. Tony, anything to add to that you're seeing?
Yeah, I guess it's semi-commercial, more of a public services standpoint. There are many search and rescue organizations around the US that have adopted Meshtastic as at least a secondary communications platform. They have the radios. The problem with those things, especially the ones that are like satellite, you know, connected, they can cost upwards of $500 to $800 per radio. So if you have one of those as your primary, say you have a group of like 50 people, you want to canvas an area looking for a lost kid. You have five of those radios, you have five groups of 10 people. One of those people has, you know, the leader has their expensive radio, and then you have a bunch of $30 to $40 Meshtastic nodes. They can scatter around, people can communicate with each other, the person with the main radio, and relay that stuff. So really it's, as we say in the military, it's a force multiplier in a big way for those organizations. So it's that. And also, I think there's been an interesting use case was somebody used to do off-road truck racing, and they were they were using some custom settings to track trucks in real time at high speed to be able to see where they were and plot that on a custom map, which I thought was a really cool use case.
Mm-hmm. That is super cool. I know Sean over at K38 does jet ski rescue. She worked Katrina and Harvey. She worked a bunch of the big disasters we've had here in the US, and she got way into Meshtastic and got a bunch of these things for her next disaster that comes down the pipe. So good to see that. Let's see, where does sensors fit in? This thing started off as kind of just a couple people talking to each other, and now I'm seeing like, oh yeah, let's feed some sensor data into the network.
Yeah, so we've got one of our vendors is Rack Wireless, and you know they're all about IoT things, but one of the cool things that they do is they make a whole bunch of sensor modules. And so they've got the boards. It's actually here. I've got, you wouldn't know it by looking at it, but this is a Rack 4631 inside of this thing. And so they've got their whole ecosystem of like snap-on modules. And so you can do, this one in fact has a compass sensor in it. And so, you know, it'll tell you which direction you're pointing. So if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you can navigate, but we can snap temperature sensors. We are, but like humidity, I think there's even a soil monitoring sensor. And then one of the things that we're doing as solutions is we're working with Rack to like, we support a bunch of them already, but to expand kind of the list. And so Rack has recently sent us an earthquake sensor. I think we have a radiation sensor coming. There's a couple of people that make like rain gauges and weather monitoring stations that are Meshtastic powered. Those are pretty cool. So like there's a lot, the list is huge, and I can't think of all of them off the top of my head, sure. But it's growing and people are doing interesting things with that too.
And so there's no limit to what can get sent. I mean, we tend to be human centric and say like, I'm going to send you text, but it's still just data at the end of the day. So any sensor, it sounds like, can be onboarded to Meshtastic. Yeah.
If you can serialize your sensor data, now, one thing to keep in mind, and people need to know this, Meshtastic is not high bandwidth. It's really low bandwidth. That is how we have ranges way, way further than Wi-Fi can go, is because we're way slower than Wi-Fi, right? It's built into the LoRa Center. And people that know LoRaWAN probably know this already because it's very similar. And I guess that's something else to make sure we mention. Meshtastic uses LoRa, but it does not use LoRaWAN.
No, I think of it a little bit like a moving LoRaWAN that's not connected to the internet. So it's just like this bubble of bubbles that kind of cruises around and goes wherever you go, as long as your other device is there. It's not connected to the internet. That's on you to figure out how to do that.
I would hate for somebody to buy like a SX1301 based LoRaWAN concentrator and then try to get Meshtastic to talk to that. I did that once upon a time, and that project ended in failure. So don't do that. Don't spend that money.
Sooner or later, it'll end up with a success, because I can't see a reason eventually to not be able to say, hey, I'm going to take my small mobile mesh network and connect that into some of the largest networks in the world. There's no reason not to do that other than a bunch of technically complex reasons.
Yeah.
We currently do that with MQTT to bridge over the internet. So there's already use cases that utilize those bridges currently.
So the whole story with that 1301 is somebody made it as a Raspberry Pi hat. I forget which vendor it was, but somebody made this thing.
Yep.
And so I could probably make this thing work, right? You know, I was I say young and dumb, it wasn't that long ago, but I was over ambitious about what I could do. And so I ordered one, spent like $100 on it and got it in, slapped it on the Raspberry Pi and started getting to work on it. And what you quickly find out is like those concentrators, the ones that are available now, they are specifically set up for LoRaWAN. Mm-hmm. And we use a different sync word than LoRaWAN does. And from what I could tell, like there isn't any way to get into those and override the sync word. So that's kind of what the problem with that one in particular. Now, devices in the future, that may be different because we have found out that we are officially on Semtech's radar now. So that's interesting. But anyway, I got that in, couldn't get it to work. I found a kind of an older, not concentrator, just a LoRa chip on a Raspberry Pi hat. I said, well, let me try this. And I actually got that one working. And so now we have kind of this whole ecosystem. We call it Meshtastic D, and it is the Meshtastic firmware running on, it's on Linux for now. We sort of have some hope of eventually making it work on other platforms, but very Linux centric for now. But there's like three or four different devices that we support where you can run Meshtastic on a Linux node, whether it's Raspberry Pi or a router, maybe a desktop computer, a server. I've got some interesting ideas for that. And so like those are, you know, you're now talking about putting them on the internet and some really interesting things going on there.
Yeah, there's cool stuff coming down the pipe. So this is a business-centric podcast. You guys are running Meshtastic solutions. This is an open source thing, so kind of anyone can build this stuff, but it is technically complex. It can be a pain in the butt to figure out. Mm-hmm. It's usually easier just to hire an expert to figure it out. What are some of the services you offer, or maybe some of the extra pieces that go into, you know, I've bought a bunch of these boards and I go find some, when I started, find some 3D printer and knock on their door like, hey, would you mind printing a case for me? So walk me through what you guys, like, how are you guys making money? How are you running the business?
So before solutions existed, I stood up it's on Etsy because right now that's easiest for me, but I'd like to expand that. I started designing what I thought were more interesting looking cases at the time in 2021, 2020. There was just like box with hole for screen. Like there wasn't a whole lot of variety in these things. Yeah, people did their best, made it. As we all know, we look for something functional. And then once it starts working, we start to make it look nice. So initially I started with the venerable T-Beam. That was one of the original devices supported, the original T-Beam.
Oh yeah.
Which people still use. There's plenty of them out there and I still make cases for them. And then I branched out into the different OEMs as they came out with these different boards from Rack, from Helltech, from LilyGo that does make the T-Beam and came up with. And again, I was in the Army for 20 years, so I'm looking for a ruggedized, tactical, military-esque kind of look, right? Like most radios look like that. And, you know, I started designing and printing and selling both the cases and various parts, and people can put their own boards in, assemble them, and colors, patterns, whatever. And then I also sell, have sold in the past, ones that are ready-made right out of the box to use. So they have a device in there with a battery and all that sort of stuff. And most of these, you know, they attach via Bluetooth to a phone and your smartphone you already have. They use mobile apps. So sometimes you don't need a screen. You just need the device and you're using the app. Sometimes you have one with a screen. It has a little bit of info on it that's useful, but you're still using your app, right? But what if you don't want to use a phone? You don't want to depend on the phone, or you don't want to have to waste battery if you want to keep it if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you can't readily charge your phone or the power's out and you can't charge it at all. Well, some vendors, actually one so far, have made a standalone. Like this is the T-Deck Pro. It's a second.
Looks like a BlackBerry.
Yeah. It actually uses the same keyboard, which is interesting. They found a stockpile of them, apparently. Yes. And before this came out, actually, and not to try to say they didn't take the idea from me. It was in progress already. It was just, you know, convergent evolution. I came out with my own standalone devices that have integrated keyboards. This is actually an empty case version. And I have this weekend, I'm actually going to come out with my clamshell waterproof little standalone device as well, which has a nice big screen and, you know, allows you to not have to rely on the phone. It does provide a somewhat limited interface. Like you can't put maps on this screen, but you have everything else. It has a compass, all those things. And this is designed by me, and there are other people in the community as well that have designed usually things for their own use cases, and then they post them to the public and people that see that and say, wow, I could use that too. And they either print it or buy it or come up with something on their own. And the nice thing is there are little cottage industries and businesses like mine that have grown around this. Some very skilled technical, like electrical engineer types, have come up with custom power modules, custom circuit boards, even complete radios that they don't have to purchase. They purchase the components and make their own because they needed some special component. So there have been a lot of great business opportunities just in the open source public community. And from a services standpoint, well, I'll defer to Jonathan, but like kind of the sky's the limit there, because mm-hmm. any company that has a very specific use case they want a tailored solution for, that is something that, you know, we're aiming at, and not to displace LoRaWAN, but sometimes you don't need all that LoRaWAN has to offer, especially at the price and scale that LoRaWAN kind of assumes that you're going to need and use. And their products are built around that scalability from a very large industrial standpoint. This is perhaps a small to medium sized business. Larges could use it too, but the idea is to have it scale it more efficiently than what only LoRaWAN can offer currently. So Jonathan, you could probably jump on that as well.
Yeah, so two things I'll tag on to that. One, right now, kind of our bread and butter business is working with the existing vendors. We sort of went to all of them and said, it would be great if you helped us make payroll and we help you have official Meshtastic stuff that, you know, has supported firmware, and, you know, we can give you feedback on design. And so one of the neat examples of that is actually the Seed Tracker card. Mm-hmm. This thing is amazing. It's waterproof. It's got great firmware support. It's got the latest Simtek radio in it. And we were able to give them some feedback on that. And so, you know, a little part of what that device is from the Meshtastic guys. And so there is that. And like I said, that's kind of where we're at now. But we're also, we're in this sort of weird transition phase where we've had people start reaching out to us and say, hey, we want to use Meshtastic for this weird use case that you guys never thought of before. Can you help us do that? And the answer is, yes, we would love to help you do that. You know, whether that is just telling you what we think about your idea, you know, your general consulting sort of thing, or here's how you integrate this in a way that makes sense with your systems. Here's how you integrate this with a way that respects the GPLv3 that the project is already under. All kinds of stuff like that. And that, you know, for like big places that really wanted a kind of a turnkey solution, we have those existing relationships with vendors. And we've got one project that's sort of in process where we're doing this. And it's like, this is the solution you want. We know these guys that have this fab. Let's make the exact piece of hardware for what you're wanting to do. And so kind of putting those two together, that's a service that we can help with as well, because we've worked with these vendors for, you know, in some cases for since the beginning of the project. And so kind of have an idea of the pitfalls, but also the way to really get stuff done.
Ripping. So it's in the name, Meshtastic Solutions.
Yeah.
People should go find you, look it up. I'll put a link down in the description. Fellas, thanks a ton for coming on. I know you're super busy with running a business. I appreciate you making the time to talk to us.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Glad to have you.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you. So whether you're a business owner, a LoRaWAN professional, or a hobbyist, the intent is to give you great LoRaWAN information. Of course, the best information doesn't come from me. It comes from the conversations we have with the people building and deploying this tech in the real world. And that's where you come in. LoRaWAN is a global patchwork of talent and ideas, and ironically for a globally connected network, most of the brilliant folks working on it aren't connected yet. Help me change that. Introduce me to someone awesome in your network, someone doing meaningful work in LoRaWAN, or just shoot me a name. I'll take it from there and get them on the show so we can share their work with the world. You can always find me at metsci.show, that's metsci.show, metsci.show. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can subscribe, leave a review, share it with your corner of the world. All of those are super helpful. If you'd like to support financially, you can go to support.metsci.show for both one-time and recurring options. We're also open to sponsors. If your company serves the LoRaWAN community and you want to reach this dedicated audience, let's talk. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, create a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 DC for free, which is enough to run a device sending hourly for about a year. This show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.